Welcome to Climate Talk Uganda. I am Josephine Karunji. Today's guest is Dr. John Bosco Isunju. He's a senior lecturer in the Department of Disease Control and Environmental Health at Makerere University School of Public Health, and he's going to give us his perspective on how public health in Uganda is being affected by climate change. Dr. Isunju's work covers a range of interlocking aspects of public health and climate change, so everything from environmental pollution, geospatial health and disaster risk reduction, to infection prevention and control, occupational safety and health, and safe water, sanitation and hygiene. He's really the ideal person to give us a 360 view of where we are today and what obstacles exist to improving long-term public health in Uganda in a climate-stressed world.
If you're to get to say climate change, you need an average at least a period of 30 years, 30 to 50 years. And that would force you to compare before the so-called period of 30 years and after that period. So that means if every time you're going to talk about change, climate change, you need to be referring before and after. And yet you may find that that time you don't have enough data about everything that you want to measure.
So if we were to measure from 2005 to where we are now, do we have data?
The data is there, but it is very scanty and may not give you the parameters that you want. But there is something I wanted to clarify here. This change is sort of continuous. So you pick out in a 30-year period between maybe 1950s up to now, you can pick several. And that means even in the future, you can pick several of those. So that means the climate change is sort of a continuous process. But should that be our concern? Our concern is the climate we are living in has exceeded threshold for safe environment. See that? That should be the really concern. The real concern is that we are living in an era where the climate has changed to an extent that it's now becoming hazardous. The environment has lots of hazards that affect humans in various ways. We can talk about how all those affect. And that is likely to worsen as we move forward because the change is only escalating. Most of the time now for climate, we talk of climate and health because we are talking about the current climate situation. Yeah? The current climate situation and what it's presenting to us and what we are predicting in the future and how we need to cope with the likely consequences that are to come in the future. So I think I was talking about
is impacting the health of the population.
Impacting the health. So let's look at something else. Let's look at nutrition. We know that micronutrients provide are from vegetables. Iron from these vegetables, greens, etc. Can you really grow those in drought? You can't. Most of our cereals are seasonal. They depend on rain-fed agriculture. So you plan when to plant millet. Okay? If you miss the season, the millet will not grow. Same with maize. Millet is our source of iron. And iron deficiency, you know what it means. It causes goitre and all these other. So if you're not able to bring to the table balanced diet, you're going to have malnutrition. So climate change directly affects food security and therefore health. That's another way. The other one is water. You see my field, really, I studied water supply, sanitation and wastewater management for the master. And water is life. Yeah? let's just put it, because we are 95% water. In Australia, in Brisbane City, their national water motto is every drop counts, count every drop. You see, that's about water demand management, the one I talked about earlier. And water also has a social value or attachment. You see people going to Namugongo, to the Uganda Matters Shrine and picking water. It's not just for drinking. Water has its social value. It's used for baptism. There are lots of other cultural things they use for water. And it also has that social identity. Because you identify with, when I'm directing people and I don't know where Uganda is, I tell them on the northern shores of Lake Victoria. Because it becomes now my point of reference. So it's home attachment. Yeah. So now when water has lost that, it's no longer available for use in the safe state. Maybe it's polluted or it has reduced. That directly affects its uses. Why? Climate change increases the intensity of weather events. If it is a flood, it will be a more severe flood in terms of the speed of the water, because it will be coming in very high volume and rushing in a short time. So when we're talking of severity of a flood, you're looking at the speed at which the water is moving. You're looking at the depth of the water and the extent. And of course, you have to think about the frequency, how often that happens. So with the changed climate or the current state we are living, the risk of these extreme or severe floods is higher. There will likely be more. So you heard of Nyamwamba. Nyamwamba had been
notorious
Notorious River Nyamwamba. It has been flooding since the 1950s after they changed its course during the operations at the mines. It used to have a natural path, and then that path was a bit altered to give way to the infrastructure developments that were happening. And then it started to retrace its path. And that's why it would come to flood the settlements. But that has been happening all through the 70s, the 80s. But now with the heating of the threshold climate change, we have reached a time where the floods from Nyamwamba will be much more frequent. In fact, the frequency will increase. Reason being, more ice will be melting at the top of Mount Rwenzori, and that ice will displace huge amounts of water in the reservoir lakes, and that will come rushing down even if it's in the dry season. Let's talk about... I was talking about water and floods. There's contamination. When these floods happen, you saw when Kampala flooded.
When Kampala floods.
Because why do I say when it flooded? Because nearly half of the city flooded. I at least for the years you've lived, I don't think you've ever experienced that. Even myself, I've never seen the entire, almost the entire city flood. I've seen the bypass get constructed. It has lasted, I don't know how many years now. It's coming to 20-something years. It has never flooded. This time it flooded. So, meaning that we are hitting thresholds that we've never experienced before. In the same month that Kampala flooded, in the same month we had the tornado. What does that tell you? Things are not normal anymore. When those extreme weather events happen, they lead to destruction. And destruction of property can actually directly affect health. The disasters.
You've given me critical examples of the tornado.
Yes.
And the flooding, where you've seen it go to extreme levels. Have there been any changes related to health issues over time? Have some health conditions become more apparent or more geographically scattered?
Very much. You see, health depends, for you to pick health outcomes, you're either going to depend on hospital records, and that means those that have been reported in health facilities, or you're doing surveillance at sentinel sites or in the community, or you're doing research. One of the things that need to be done is do surveillance for climate-affected or climate-regulated diseases or health outcomes. We do not have sufficient data. And some of these are not directly, like, for example, if a house collapses and you get injuries, these injuries will directly be reported. But if there is a flood and it provides breeding sites for mosquitoes, you're going to report malaria and dengue and others, but you're not picking data on the vectors that are responsible for picking the malaria and transmitting across. So they are also an intermediate factor or mediating factor for which we do not have the data. So there are lots of data gaps in between. And data means research, because if you're going to collect data, you need to do it in really scientific way so that it's valid. And that means it now takes us to research that will inform decisions. Yeah. So there's need to research the entire causal chain and not stop at just looking at relationships. There is increased this, and therefore there is increased this. But what leads to that, and how can you then intervene? Because when you come to interventions, you have to look at specific target areas and indicators you're going to measure for the impact that you wanted to achieve. So there is need to identify, they call it the theory of change or whatever, but the causal mechanism, so that you are able to identify specific entry points which you can use to break the chain. I want to give an example. You see, we say that climate change has led to increase in vector-borne diseases like malaria, dengue, and others, because it increases reach, geographical reach of breeding sites, boosts their resistance because of change in temperature, increases the rate at which they multiply, the rate of growth, but also because of the raised temperature, some areas that used to be cooler, like Kabale, where the mosquitoes not bite at a certain temperature, can now bite. But also the mosquitoes have adapted to be able to bite at different conditions. Now, there is also importation of alien species, like Anopheles stephensi. That one used to be in India, and later it came to around the coast of East Africa, Somalia, and Ethiopia. But now it is in Uganda. And it bites during day. It survives very well in urban areas, so you can no longer say, the messages were saying, cut bushes around the house. So there are no bushes, but you have the mosquitoes. Then the other intervention for controlling of malaria is close windows early. It bites during day. So these are the things that we need to catch up with. So climate change has triggered lots of changes that have not been uncovered.
If I'm hearing you right, the mosquitoes have adapted, the people have not. And the messaging we are giving people to help them help themselves are from way back. Yeah. And they've not adapted the same way that these mosquitoes have adapted.
Exactly. I've just put it right in a simple way. So we are not copying. We are not adapting to the changes. And also we cannot just adapt to what we don't know. Like right now, we do not know whether this vector Anopheles stephensi is here. We do not have data on it.
We just know that the mosquito that's now biting us, the things we are saying can, are not working.
Yes, we see that. What we see is that the data is saying there's erratic cases of malaria in Kampala. They shoot very high to epidemic values, and then they go very low in some seasons. But what we see is that during rainy, soon after the rainy season, you see a peak. Yeah. And we do not know what is responsible for the residual malaria cases after interventions have been put in place, like distributing mosquito nets. So you do interventions which are written down as we have been doing and which are already in the program. But we can see residual malaria cases.
So sometimes interventions are not as effective as they used to be.
There are gaps. So there are gaps which need further research to be able to identify what next needs to be done. Yes. So that's what we are saying, climate smart health programming. We have a component in the HNAP, the Health National Adaptation Plan. I think it is component 8. It's climate smart health programming. Means that whatever program we are coming, you know, all these NGOs, they operate through programs, okay? So these programs have to be made climate smart. They have to be informed by facts, by causal mechanisms, and not blanket approaches. Because blanket approaches, yes, they may yield some results, but then you're going to spend a lot. But if you have targeted interventions, the WHO calls it high burden, high impact. So you target where the issue is. And then with your limited resources, because we'll never have enough resources now with all these donor cuts, you are able to get the highest impact with limited resources. So we also need tools to guide us to do that.
You know, I'm convinced every time I listen to someone that comes into the studio that if I had a huge chunk of money and I needed to put it into the Ugandan economy, it would be research. I listen to everybody say we don't have enough information to actually tell us. We can guess, we can assume, but to actually point to something and say this is the problem. Mm-hmm. Where would you put your money?
Where would I put my money? When you're working in an integrated way, you don't fund one thing. You would rather fund bits of everything and you achieve something than funding one thing. Let me give you an example. If you only funded research, yes, you'll get to know. So we know. So what? We get to know.
At least we know.
But we can't do anything.
You know, the problem is that we don't know. So we are doing bits and bits of things without concrete information that helps us get concrete outcomes.
Let me give you another example. So you, for example, you put funds in generating the knowledge. So you get to know that this is going to happen, but you do not have the money or the idea on how to go about it.
What
to do.
Solve it.
Yeah, what to do. It's like when they tell you you have cancer. Okay?
You know, their treatments maybe in other countries where they would do maybe use some nuclear medicine and give you some bit of relief, much better than the other options. But if you don't know, you'll not know. You'll just...
You keep living your life. And then one day you wake up dead.
You wake up dead. So that's the thing. So it's important, what can we strategically focus on in a particular period? And that's why departments or ministries have to have strategic plans or strategies. We are currently working with the Ministry of Health to develop environmental health strategy. So the strategy identifies key priority areas that will be the focus in the next 5 years, and then breaks down the costs and identifies the potential sources of financing for these, and coordination, and who will do what. So you deal with something manageable. I would certainly look at what is in Uganda's national development planning, because these documents have been carefully crafted, I must say. They have the building blocks. We just need to
implement
them.
Is there any implementation that we're doing? Are there any measures that we've adopted, or that I don't want to say the ones that are recommended, because it just feels like the recommendation stays on paper. Is there anything that we are doing right now to enable us to better adapt?
Yes. I will give you one example. Early warning is ongoing. The Ministry of Health and the UNIMA, Uganda Meteorological Authority, are working together through HISP is a project, I think, that is trying to improve data availability, the health data availability, and it is trying to integrate climate data with health data. Because you can easily model and predict environmental data, because you'll be having a lot of historical data and you can predict the weather data. Now, if you know the relationship between the weather data and certain health outcomes, that means you can easily predict the health outcomes and therefore plan accordingly or put measures in place. There is increased digitalization. This helps us to store all this information, but also increased integration, sharing of the information. I think what needs to be added is the action. So if we have seen this and this and this, so what am I supposed to do as the common man? I think that part is still missing. I've seen in the Netherlands, they tell you, okay, it is likely to, you know, they have very many weather in a day. So they can have five different. So they tell you, make sure to carry an umbrella, a warm jacket. You know. So you know that maybe around two, I'll need an umbrella if I'm going to step out. So you can now plan it in your day. You know, around two, I will be indoors. So I don't really need an umbrella.
We had those updates, but we knew that if they said don't carry an umbrella, we would carry it, because we just weren't sure about the accuracy of that message.
Yes, unfortunately, for us here, we largely depend on global models. We do not have very many stations, so these global models have to be also ground-truthed so that the calibration can be accurate, so that you get much closer to the real scenario. But maybe we'll get there with time as we get our own satellites. And
you know what keeps ringing in my mind is you saying the mosquitoes have adapted and our messaging remains the same. Isn't there something to be said about that? If we know that it's no longer business as usual, that mosquito nets are not the overall answer, or that just making sure you don't have, or you close your windows at 6 p.m., if we know that that's not effective, why are we not changing the messages we're giving people? It's the same way on one of our earlier episodes, we were speaking to an extension worker who said, and another lady who said, ah, her mother has grown up knowing that when the when she's told that don't plant in this season, she will plant because she knows that it's whatever the weather is going to be, it's going to be against what she has been told it is. So we don't trust our messaging. It has not evolved.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's my question to answer or the... maybe it needs to be channeled to the right...
As a doctor,
yes.
Isn't there something to be said about the messages we're giving people?
It's very important to be calculative what you communicate, because you can either incite a reaction which you can't control. So communicating to society or to the public has to always be
calculated, well
balanced and calculated. You have to, and also you need to communicate accurately. Most of the time you do not have full facts. So it's important to tell people that, yes, the environment has changed and it's bringing us more challenges. The government is coping to address these challenges, but in the meantime, be on the alert. Those kind of messaging, which keeps, of course, the government safe and doesn't incite much as research goes on. Because honestly, what did you want, like the Commissioner Health Promotion, to come and say if they do not have full detail of what they should say?
The problem is, if you're telling me that if I have a mosquito net, if I close my windows early, if I, you know, get rid of all the water, open water sources that are, you know, and I do all that and my kids are still getting malaria, I'm going to think, and then later I find out, from, you know, conversations like this, I find out that my friend, the kind of mosquito we are dealing with is not the one that I will just say, Ugandan things.
The ministry itself, once it has its data about what the new threat they have to deal with, then they have their response, emergency response teams, where they sit and develop standard operating procedures for on how to, they are going to address. You remember when Mpox came, it was a new thing. But my friend, immediately they had come up with messaging and precautions for the public. And they have a full department, a Department of Health Promotion, I think, and which does all these communication messages. They discuss, they even agree on which images they should put out there.
I really don't like that picture on the posters. <Why I'm
laughs> Yeah, maybe they need to engage a little more of the stakeholders out there for their impression. I think that is a very good feedback. They need to check whether this is...
It is an effective picture. It's just...
So the reason that they choose certain images or certain approaches, but also you need to know which kind of population you're dealing with. Maybe they can be... If you're targeting the youth, for example, they may not be reading posters. They need large on social media, TikTok and what. So you need TikTokers to come and do a message that is going to capture that audience.
What more does the government need to do in terms of research and spending? And we spoke a little bit about this. In the area of climate change and health, what should be our priorities?
For the health sector, we have already developed the Health National Adaptation Plan. In fact, Uganda was among the second country globally that was able to pull off the National Development Plan according to the guidance that was provided by the United Nations and WHO. So in that, we have 10 areas of focus. So those are the 10 areas that I was saying we need to finance. The 10th is health financing, climate and health financing. So the financing is to finance the coordination, which is the first one, leadership and governance and coordination, because climate change is a multifaceted. Everyone has something to do. If you need infrastructure and you're a department of environmental health in the Ministry of Health, you're not the one who puts up infrastructure. You have to go to the Department of Infrastructure. You have to talk to the Ministry of Works, and so on and so forth. Energy, you know, you need sustainable energy. You need to work with the Ministry of Energy because sustainable energy is a critical component for healthcare. Otherwise, you'll not be able to keep the cold chain in healthcare facilities. You'll not be able to sustain all the other services, lighting in the hospital, delivering mothers at night without energy. So these nexus, interconnections, you need proper coordination. And that's why the Prime Minister's office is always a center point in these meetings.
What would be your parting shot? What would you like people to know about climate change and health and what our priorities are as Ugandans or should be?
Okay. Yeah, so I usually say that everyone is a champion. Everyone is a climate and health champion because everyone is affected. Usually to a common man, climate change is far-fetched. It looks to be a very global thing. You need to narrow down to how the climate affects them on their daily activities. So if you ask someone, maybe in Pader, what they're facing, they will just tell you their well has dried and now they walk a very long distance to get water. So their reality of climate change is in terms of access to safe water. Another one who is a farmer will definitely tell you the cows now are dying, and like in Toroko area where they had to lose so many cows. So we need to narrow down to the common man. Look at what they are doing. In fact, I like that project that you're doing, which is looking at livelihoods in communities. May I believe once we empower people's livelihoods, everything will thrive. Because somehow everything rotates and comes back to socioeconomic. That pillar of human capital and socioeconomic transformation is very well thought. So if we can aim to build that, people will have the capacity to do all other small things themselves. Like, you very well know that there are mosquitoes, but your house is not very well screened. Why you can't screen your house is because your pocket is weak. It is divided between school fees, sickness, and all these other things. If this pocket was firm, and then you know what to do from the communication that is going on, and even you're guided on how to do it, then you protect yourself.
Knowledge
and socioeconomic empowerment will change a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. John Bosco Isunju is Senior Lecturer in the Department of Disease Control and Environmental Health at Makerere University School of Public Health. This is Climate Talk Uganda, and I am Josephine Karunji. Until next time, goodbye.